Good afternoon. Can you hear me at the back? Okay. Now, I'll be talking to you today, or we'll be discussing what the power of a soil's threshold phosphorus saturation is. And the work that is being presented here has gone over several years, and there are several collaborators who are colleagues or undergraduate students, graduate students, postdocs, etc., and including technical staff. So what I've done is those who have been involved in one particular area, I have recognized them at the bottom of the slide and also recognized or acknowledged the funding source for that particular piece of work. Now, to begin with, what is the phosphorus saturation ratio? I'll give you an outline. And look at the ratio for surface and subsurface horizons for wetlands and figure out whether we can actually have a threshold value across various soil types. And finally, relate the PSR, or the phosphorus saturation ratio, to Langmuir and Freundlich isotherm parameters. Now, why are we so interested in Langmuir and Freundlich isotherm parameters? These are some of the parameters that are used very often in P loss predictive models, and we are looking for simple ways in order to get these parameters. Now, first of all, what is a phosphorus saturation ratio? It is very simple. It is simply a ratio of P, of an extractable P, to iron and aluminum, all right? And those factors can be obtained in an oxalate solution or a soil test solution, such as Malic 1 or Malic 3. Now, with that in mind, we move along to what is termed, as many of you may be more familiar with, the concept of the degree of P saturation, or DPS. Both the PSR and the DPS are related. The only difference is DPS is expressed as a percentage, and it often includes an alpha value in the bottom of the equation, the lower part in the denominator of the equation, and that factor varies from 0.3 to 0.75 or something like that, and most people take a value of 0.5, so that DPS divided by 200 is actually PSR. Now, when we plot PSR against water-soluble P, which is the P that's released in contact with water, we find what we have as a change point. That is, right here you will find there is a point at which the P takes off, the P in solution takes off rapidly, all right? So that is what we term as a change point, or as a threshold PSR value. Now, we looked at phosphorus saturation ratio and the water-soluble P value using the parameters in an oxalate solution, in a Malic 1 solution, which is a soil test solution, and a Malic 3 solution, which is also a soil test solution. And what we find is that the threshold point is about 0.1, irrespective of the extractants that is used. It's close to 0.1 at any rate. Now, with that, we looked for the PSR, or the threshold value, for subsurface horizons. And why do we need to look at subsurface horizons? There are many instances along the southeastern USA coastal plain soils where leaching is a primary mode of P transport. Now, if you look at, again, the PSR values, there is a threshold that occurs both for the subsurface horizons. What we have chosen is two entirely different soil types. One is the spodosols soils, where the BH horizon is actually organically complexed with aluminum, and the BT horizons of altisols is inorganically complex, and which also has about 20% of clay. Now, originally, we all considered the DPS concept, or the PSR concept, to be useful for sandy soils, but now we are finding that you can even use the same concept for clay soils. These have 20% clay, but we do not know what it looked like when you have higher clay percentages. We probably have a high maximum retention, but the release is still based on the iron aluminum in an oxalate or a Malic 1P solution. Now, to move along, we looked into the PSR of wetland soils. And the reason is, if you have a landscape, you have the uplands, the wetlands, and so on, the streams, the sediments. So we need to look at whether it's applicable to wetland soils. And yes, it is applicable. The PSR value is again close to 0.1. And each of these is statistically determined so that you have a confidence interval. And the confidence interval ranges usually from 0.05 to 0.15. So that's a 95% confidence interval we are referring to. So now coming back to the threshold PSR values, there are many ways in which releasable P is measured. In the examples I just cited, we used water-soluble P. But other researchers have used dilute salt solutions, such as the 10th mole or calcium chloride solution, or looked into the runoff in simulated rainfall experiments, relating them to the PSR, or looked into the leachate in column studies, and also iron oxide strips. All right. Now we'll go over to some of the threshold values that have been found by many of the researchers. There are a couple of things I'd like you to notice here. First of all, we have the location. It ranges from several of the US states into Brazil, Italy, Netherlands, UK, and Uganda. That means we are actually moving into tropical regions as well. And soil orders, there's a whole range of soil orders, altisols, antisols, pertisols, alfisols, mollisols, what else? Oxisols, all right? You name it, it seems to work there too. Now, I tried to look into the PSR values, and many of them had originally had it as DPS values, so I just converted them, and you'll find a few that I have just identified, which I've identified as, I have marked off, where the alpha factor was used as 1. So if we use a value of 0.5, for example, then what you will notice is almost all the PSR values fall right around 0.1 to 0.15, somewhere in the range. So what it does show is that irrespective of the soil type, location, etc., it should be possible to get a threshold PSR which is consistent, all right? And possibly it works more, not only just for sandy soils. We'll have to work a little bit more on that aspect. Now, across the southeastern USA, we did a simple experiment. There were soils taken from uplands, wetlands, the edge and the center of the wetlands. And this is an entirely different way of computing for the threshold PSR values. But in spite of all the equations that were involved, we find that we ended up with an threshold oxalate PSR, malic 1 or malic 3, which is again pretty close to 0.1. That is really amazing that irrespective of what we have done, we still come up with something pretty close. Now, here's a look at malic 3 PSR values and groundwater quality. This is an experiment. It's a Delaware case study published just recently by Andre and Sims. They assess the potential impacts of wastewater rapid infiltration basin system on groundwater quality. In other words, it was looking down a whole soil profile. And what did they find? Pretty much what we had discussed earlier. There is a change point right about 0.1 or 0.15 above which the water increases or the degradation of the water quality becomes more severe. And they have recommended, in fact, that soil tests such as malic 3 be used instead of some usual studies where you use batch equilibrium P isotherms to arrive at similar sort of results. Now, with that, let us look at what the relationship is between the PSR and isotherm parameters. Obviously, there must be some sort of a relationship. I'm taking here just the nonlinear isotherms. There should be linear relationships too. And some among the many factors that we look at, the very commonly used KL, or the constant, the P bonding constant for Langmuir equations, and the KF, the Freundlich adsorption coefficients, are often used in P loss predictive models. So we have to look for an easy way of obtaining these values instead of doing the whole time-consuming Langmuir or Freundlich isotherms. The other thing that's of importance is the EPC, the equilibrium phosphorus concentration, where the concentration of a P in soil is when the soil is neither adsorbing nor releasing phosphorus. Let us look now at the relationship between PSR and EPC. And what do we notice? Right around 0.1 is when it starts, EPC starts increasing. All right? Now to look at KL, KF, and the PSR. How do they relate? Let us look at the one on the top, the graph on the top side, where it is you have KL, or the Langmuir adsorption coefficient on the y-axis and the PSR on the x-axis. And what do you notice? As soon as you reach the threshold PSR value, Langmuir K becomes zero, that there is no bonding, no further bonding. If it was held, you would have a positive value. So a simple indicator is if you measure the threshold PSR value, which you can do very easily by dividing P by iron and aluminum in a soil test solution, you know when the soil is becoming a P source. And if we look at the Freundlich coefficient, the KF in the bottom graph, the relationship, there is a definite relationship in the whole thing from which you can obtain the corresponding Freundlich KF. It is a simple equation. It's not linear, but there is an equation. And what is interesting is these equations are based irrespective of the soil, because we have the A, E, and the BT, BT clubbed together under these circumstances. Now we'll go back and take a look at what happens when the soil is below the threshold value. Can we obtain a value for KL from this equation? And that's where we look at it in the next one. Obviously, those values must have a relationship with the iron and aluminum that's already in solution. So we can use any parameter that is a function of iron and aluminum. And in this case, we looked at KL as a function of the soil P storage capacity, which is a simple equation. It's a simple calculation based on the difference between the threshold PSR of a soil and the soil PSR multiplied by iron and aluminum content in the soil. And they can all be obtained from a soil test solution. So what do you notice? Once we get a linear equation, you should be able to get a KL value from the SPSC value. So more on this will be presented in a poster just in a few minutes. It's at 4 o'clock, and it's poster 1103. In summary, we'll see that now we have threshold PSRs identified for surface horizons, subsurface horizons, for uplands, wetlands, streams, and ditches, and it's likely that a threshold value can be obtained for various soil types, example, within the southeastern USA, and when the PSR is below the threshold value, then EPC and water-soluble P are a minimum. All right, it's basically zero, but will begin to increase once the threshold is reached. And finally, the strength of P bonding and the KF and the Freundlich adsorption coefficient, normally obtained from time and resource-consuming isotherms, can be estimated from soil test data for input into extant P loss predictive models. And just to give you an overview, we now can figure out whether the uplands is a source or a sink of phosphorus, same with the wetlands, streams, and we can literally predict what would go out into the waterways. Just two examples of a poorly drained aldisol and a somewhat poorly drained aldisol and a poorly drained spodosols. We are able to get the K values across all the horizons from simple soil test data, and that can be used in any of the existing P loss predictive models. And with that, thank you.
Thank you.